first half, second half, it's like chalk and cheese.
I can't have my best foot in front of it, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is the evening of Thursday, September 12th, 2019. Rabbi Mark Goodman, the Colorado Rapids, since last we podcasted, have two victories over two likely playoff teams. Robin Fraser is now undefeated in three games against three teams that are vying for the playoffs. And if they do make the playoffs, then Robin Fraser has a much better resume from a coaching standpoint with the Colorado Rapids. And if those teams end up not making the playoffs, those teams' fans will probably look back at their loss to the Rapids and say that was the reasoning behind them not making the playoffs.
Yeah, it's not fun to come to Colorado and lose, is it, Matt?
No, it is not. I can speak for, I think it's fair for me to speak for Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Nicolò Daro in that regard based on what's transpired in the last 7 days.
Did you get to talk to Zlatan afterwards or no? They didn't bring him out for interviews yesterday.
They did do a post-game media scrum. Steris was out. I missed, Chris Pontius and Giancarlo Gonzalez. And Zlatan was out, but in typical, in a not so funny way, folks, if you want to have fun, since Rapids Twitter's been, you know, trolling the galaxy for the last 24 hours, go on Twitter and either, I don't remember the hashtag, but just search LA Galaxy North Korea and you will see a lot of very hilarious things about Galaxy fans and people who cover the team in the media just commenting on the Galaxy controlling access and trying to control narrative on the littlest things. And so, you know, the akin to that, Mark, would be only a KSC employee who's a part of, you know, the altitude team being allowed to ask questions. So we were not allowed to ask Guillermo Barros-Galota any questions, and the only thing that we were there to was really collect audio that the Galaxy Digital team was having that they were going to put up at the end of the night anyways. So I got to see Zlatan. I got to take in the presence of Zlatan. I got to hear him say that Rolf Felscher should have finished that header at the end of the game, and it doesn't matter. It shouldn't have been a penalty because the ball's gone, and either it's a goal or a no goal, no matter what. I did not physically get to have Zlatan look at me ask him a question and then him give me, you know, answers to the universe or anything like that, as of course our one true God.
Well done. That must be fun though. It's still fun. I mean, it's always fun to just be in the presence of. I remember, I think I've probably told this story on the pod before, but at the freezing game against Toronto a couple months ago.
And a half ago now, Mark.
Yeah, 18 months ago.
Anthony Hudson's first ever game.
Yeah, I was pinned, I was stuck in the hallway, and I couldn't move past the interview that was happening to my left, and it was with Michael Bradley. And I don't have any questions for Michael Bradley, but I was standing about 8 inches from his head, and you just get to gaze at his giant bald head and those pretty, pretty blue eyes, and you're like, you're kind of awesome! And that's it. You just enjoy being in the presence. So, you know, I mean, I can imagine that must have been what it was like to you. And also for you to be between Kellen Acosta and Clint Irwin during post-game interviews and have Francisco pretend to be a legit reporter. Did you sign him up for a last word on soccer right after? Did you tell him he gets his own column every week if he can prove himself as a writer and an interviewer?
No, but I probably should. I'm gonna guess, Mark, that it's probably a conflict of interest for players to be writing about, you know, writing for media sites that are covering the league itself. You know, that's more of a Players Tribune thing, and I'm sure Kellen Acosta is, you know, well spoken enough to do something with Players Tribune if he wanted to do something. No, it's a funny dynamic, Mark. I've got two kind of inside baseball-y stories that I have to tell now. I'll say to the funny one first, but with where they have things set up from a media standpoint, you will often or occasionally will have players playing pranks on their teammates, or just sort of standing there to try and get them to crack, or, you know, just having a little bit of a joshing, with that. Sam Nicholson is an absolute fantastic troll when it comes to that, especially with guys like Jack Price or any of the British guys just sort of standing there and making faces to try and get them to do crazy things. And then I want to say it was the Seattle game when I was talking with, Jonathan Lewis, and I asked him about the pressing style and what they did to just disrupt and make Seattle uncomfortable. And Jonathan Lewis says, you know, honestly, we hunted Seattle tonight. And Sam Nicholson was kind of walked behind the camera, and he kind of joking, he says, yeah, we did, John. So that was really, really funny. Tommy Smith had another funny moment. And then obviously, you know, Kellen Acosta took it to a new level. So from a media trolling standpoint, definitely befitting of Acosta in wearing the number 10 jersey. And then the other one that I kind of want to say, I haven't said this, Mark, and to anybody. I've thought about it, and I've been waiting to save it for if I was ever in a situation where I was speaking with Roger Bennett of the Men in Blazers show. The Trinidad and Tobago World Cup qualifier at DSG Park, a 2-0 win for the United States. At that time, they were comfortably, in the top three in the hexagonal. I believe Christian Pulisic had a brace in that one. And so I was sitting in the rest of the media scrum. Normally, the first time I see a big name or I'm nervous, I just say, I'm just going to listen. And then the next opportunity I have, I'm going to say something. But then I thought, you know, what are the odds? You know, what's it going to have to take for me to be in the next room with Michael Bradley? This might be the only opportunity I get to talk to Michael Bradley. So in the same way I was disappointed in not getting a chance to talk to or interview Zlatan, that was my same approach, but there wasn't a media handler there. It wasn't, you know, U.S. national team North Korea doesn't exist in the way that LA Galaxy North Korea exists from a media standpoint at times. And so I actually had access and could have asked something of Michael Bradley in the ways that I could not of GBS or Zlatan last night. And so I was getting ready. I was waiting for everybody else. I was just going to wait for everybody to leave and then ask Bradley something. And then I completely choked up. And then he was looking at me. He's like, you have anything else you want to say? And then I said, no. And the specific question that I was thinking of was, we had just finished up with the media time for the coaches. For World Cup qualifiers, folks, you get access to both coaches. And the Trinidad and Tobago's coach, whose name escapes me at the time, was very well spoken in English. Sometimes, you know, you'll basically have all the U.S. media waiting around for whoever the U.S. coach is at the time. And then if it's a Spanish language coach, you know, like Tata Martino, for example, basically all the American language, all the English language media ends up leaving, and then all the Spanish language media ends up showing up. But this time we actually got to stay around for that World Cup qualifier because the Trinidad and Tobago coach was going to speak in English. I don't know offhand what native tongue he speaks on one of the two islands, but in any case, he was doing everything in English, and he said that, you know, the mistakes we made were due to ourselves. The system was in place. We just had a couple of young players, and, you know, in some of those big moments, they were going to end up shrinking. But he believed that if we executed our system for the whole of the 90 minutes, they would have made it a lot more difficult on the United States, and it would have taken something special from a Michael Bradley, Jozy Altidore, Christian Pulisic in order to actually get something done, in order to get a result in that game. He believed that the team had a little bit more time because they wouldn't have to travel. Like, if this game was played in Trinidad and Tobago, that they would have been in a better situation and they could have gotten results on their home field with the surface that they like and having a little bit more time to train, while the U.S. would have had to have time to travel. So I was going to ask Bradley about that. And about, you know, if you had to play this game again in Trinidad and Tobago, were there any lessons you learned that you could have broken them down such that if they were at their best on their own day, you would have found a way to ultimately get a result on that? So I don't ask that question to Michael Bradley. Now we know what happens later in October of that year, Mark. I now have to ask, is me not asking that question and pulling an inception on Michael Bradley, not preparing him enough for that game, ultimately, Mark, is it my fault that the United States men's national team did not qualify for the 2016 Men's World Cup? 2018, excuse me.
You are a little hard on yourself, Matt. I don't think it's your problem. I don't think you're responsible.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Okay, we've got one other banter topic that I want to bring up tonight, Mark, if we've got a couple minutes. And I think it's about time. We're late enough in the season that people other than Supporter Shield and Golden Boot and MVP can start talking about some of the other postseason awards. And I think it is worth having a discussion, especially given what he's done in the last two games, and I would say over the course of the whole season, where an Andrei Shinyashiki ranks in terms of Rookie of the Year potential voting, who some of his competition is, and just what has he done. And given that Colorado isn't a sexy market from an MLS standpoint, you had Axel Schuberg, who was the, I would argue, the best defender on the best defense in MLS history at the time in 2016, ended up finishing third in the 2016 Defender of the Year voting behind a Yella Van Dam, I believe, with the LA Galaxy, who obviously was playing for a big market team and might have been, you know, a more charismatic character than Axel. So let's go through Shinyashiki here, folks. Has 7 goals and 2 assists on the season after the game against Seattle Sounders. No goals nor assists for Shinyashiki against the LA Galaxy, but I would argue Mark was very dynamic, and I believe he did get the Player of the Night award as well. So Shinyashiki, I found out today, Mark, that Brendan Aaronson is technically eligible as a rookie for this year. The Rookie of the Year award, folks, can only go to players who are in, who were drafted that season. So in this case, 2019, the 2019 MLS Super Draft class, and or someone who is in their first year of a professional contract. So players who are just in their first year in MLS but have played previously professionally are not eligible. Homegrowns who maybe, you know, were signed in 2016, you know, like some of the guys for FC Dallas, you know, who basically just didn't play for the first 3 years, who are now getting their first opportunities or made their MLS debut in 2019 are not eligible. And obviously anybody who was maybe an MLS homegrown or a draftee and played a couple years in USL, was on a professional contract there, and then now is in MLS, would not be eligible. But so in any case, Mark, Andrei Shinyashiki currently second amongst MLS, players or MLS rookies in terms of minutes played, just under 1400 minutes for him. Brendan Aaronson of the Philadelphia Union is ahead of him with, 1470 minutes played. Brendan Aaronson, Andrei Shinyashiki, and, Omar Fernandez of the New York Red Bulls are all tied on assists for MLS rookies with 2. Andrei Shinyashiki leads all MLS rookies with 7 goals, and then the only he's the only one with more than 5. The only other one in there is Benji Michel of the Orlando City SC, and then Aaronson, previously mentioned as well, has 3 goals to his name as well. So and the other two, only other two players that are significant as far as minutes played and MLS is Dotson, the outside back from Minnesota United, who I think we've both been impressed with, Mark. I do not have their minutes as of this week, but in any case, he's right around just under 1,200. And then Dwayne Jones.
Wow.
From,
you are good.
Thank you.
It's 1,171.
1,171. Okay, I didn't have his minutes from the game that they played against Houston. And then Dwayne Jones from New England Revolution was at 1,116 last I checked. So Shinyashiki just barely second in minutes played by a rookie, overwhelmingly running away with a Rookie of the Year, with a, I guess, a rookie Golden Boot, if one were to exist. And he's tied on assists as well. And some of his goals have been absolutely spectacular, Mark. So, you know, Jones has been more of a cog player. I don't know that he's done a whole lot of significant stuff. Dotson has had several fantastic plays, you know, 2 assists, a couple, or 2 goals, a couple big assists for him. And then obviously Brendan Aaronson, who is playing regularly, 21 starts for him, or 21 starts, 24 games played on arguably one of the best teams in MLS, Philadelphia Union, third in the Eastern Conference. Mark, what do you make of this Rookie of the Year race? Where does Andrei Shinyashiki stack up? You know, and what do you make of his form and just what he has accomplished as a rookie in MLS, being a 4-year guy who started in college and walked into a very talented and veteran striker core for the Colorado Rapids in 2019?
There was one other guy who was an early season favorite, and he had a lot of he was leading in minutes at the middle of the season, and then I think he's either been shut down or kind of like lost his spot. I think he's healthy,
and that's Edwin Cerrillo of FC Dallas. He has 828 minutes. He's kind of a central midfielder who sometimes gets played on the wing. Dallas has really struggled this year, especially since the All-Star break, and even since like mid-season. And Cerrillo has kind of like lost his way also. I think he pretty much nailed it. You know, Hassani Dotson is probably, if you're ever gonna pick a non-scoring player, and I think that's an important thing to consider, that like players who score a lot often get most of the respect, no matter how good or how spectacular a defender is. A guy who scores goals, it's just easy to point to and say, well, that's probably the guy. Brandon Aaronson is kind of a late oncoming guy. Not that he hasn't been on the team for a long time. He's got, like you said, 1,470 minutes, meaning he actually leads Andre Shinichiki in minutes. But and he predominantly plays as a midfielder, but more of an attacking midfielder or a wing midfielder. But he has 3 goals, 2 assists. So I don't think that he is going to show off as impressively as Andre Shinichiki, who has 7 goals and 2 assists. At the beginning of the season, I think we talked about, we talked about the fact that he probably end the season at 5 goals and that he had a shot at Rookie of the Year. And I jokingly asserted that he might finish the season with 15 goals. He might legitimately have 15 goals. I mean, it'd be unlikely, but if he could score a brace here or there, he could definitely get into like, he could definitely finish the season with 12 goals. I mean, that's a reasonable possibility, which would make him, I think, the highest scoring rookie since, Kyle Larin back in, I guess it was like, probably
2014, yeah, that would have been Orlando's first season, and he was double digits that year. Kyle Larin was,
and he was the highest scoring rookie of the year ever, I think. So, so long story short, I kind of think that Shinichiki is running away with it, and there's no, even if he sat on the bench for the rest of the season and did not play a minute, even if he played every minute of the rest of the season and didn't score a single goal or assist, I still think he's the rookie of the year, Matt. It's just kind of a guarantee. And also because there hasn't been anybody who was that, legitimate. I want to add 2 last things about Andre, which is, one that, credit to the front office for picking him and making a deal to go get him and being confident that he would be useful. And prolific for his team. But I think a bigger credit is to really predominantly Connor Casey and, Robin Fraser for putting him in a position to succeed. I mean, placing him as your center forward in a 4-3-3 this last week really accentuated a lot of his best aspects. And one of the other questions that we're going to start talking about in the offseason, although we don't really need to talk about it now, is whether you even need to bring back Kai Kamara if you could just put Andre Shinichiki in there and get potentially equal or potentially even better production. They're different players. They give you a different look. But I think Andre Shinichiki, if he has all the minutes and all the time that Kai Kamara has, might have exactly produced or outproduced Kai Kamara this year. I only wonder what he would do next year when Kamara is 35 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well said there, Mark. You know, I think I want to say that Dotson is probably more of a competition for Shinichiki or for this award in general than we probably think so, just because the way, you know, these voters and members of the media, and I guess full record, just to keep on record here, folks, Mark and I are not involved at all in any of this, so we don't get a say, or, you know, we're not voters who are advocating for anything here. We don't get a vote for any of the league awards at the end of the season. I'm not even sure who actually I know coaches and players do, and then I think it might have to be national media, Mark, so we're not eligible for that. In any case, I'm just looking at I think Dotson has value because one of the narratives that a lot of those voters will tend to have, Mark, is there's always the playoff argument of, you know, if you were, you know, if you're truly the MVP of the league for a season, then, and your team doesn't make the playoffs, then you're not an MVP, because if you were the best player, you would have been able to get your team to the playoffs. And so you could argue that Dotson has been an integral piece on a Minnesota United team that is probably going to make the playoffs, and he's been an outside back on a defense that, at least in terms of goals conceded over the course of one season to another, is probably the most improved defense in the league. Now, is he as impactful as Ozzie Alonso and Aiko Parra and their goalkeeper Metaner, I think? No. Whose name I can't remember how to pronounce, absolutely not, but he's been an impactful player. And so his impact on Minnesota might not be as big as Shinyashiki's impact on the Colorado Rapids, but simply by being on a playoff team, that might get Dotson a few more looks than Shinyashiki would. And maybe the one thing that I'll say as far as Brendan Aaronson, who I think is a fantastic young player, and if there's anybody from the Philadelphia Union Academy that's been hyped up almost as much as FC Dallas in recent time, Mark, I think if there's anybody who they're selling for any, you know, seven-figure transfer fee or more, right now, it's probably going to be Brendan Aaronson over the course of, you know, the next couple of years. And so the thing that I'll say about Aaronson, if I'm just looking at how he's impacting in terms of who he has to compete with Justin Kent on the field and everything, I think you could argue, Mark, that Marco Fabian hasn't been super spectacular at times this season. He had a couple injuries, a couple pretty ugly red cards. You know, Fafa Biko can be a good player, but also, you know, has been extremely inconsistent. There's Sergio Santos there. You know, David Akam as well, who's been injured and inconsistent. And, you know, if I'm just looking at it, you know, Kai Kamara has been, you know, everywhere that he's gone in MLS, no matter how poorly talented the team is, no matter the dysfunction of the coaching standpoint, he has gotten double-digit goals in Columbus, with Sporting Kansas City, with the Vancouver Whitecaps, with the New England Revolution. He is a bona fide number nine in this league, and no matter where you play him or the team that you put him on. Put him on FC Cincinnati, and I guarantee you, folks, he has double-digit goals right now for FC Cincinnati with almost no help around him. And then you have Diego Rubio, who was kind of on the bench for Sporting Kansas City, but he's getting called up by the Chilean national team, Mark. And Chile is not a joke as far as a major international power in South America. And then he's also competing with, you know, to a lesser extent because of position and everything, also Jonathan Lewis, who's been called up for the United States men's national team. So, you know, he's competing with international players as far as who he's trying to beat out in order to get on the field. And never mind Nicky Jackson as well, Mark, who had a whole year of being a professional, scored a minute and 22 seconds into his MLS debut, and Shinyashiki just walked in and just straight up, you know, leapfrogged him on the depth chart from the get-go in preseason, right after he ended up, you know, he got signed. You know, who has Dotson had to compete with? Who's a bona fide veteran outside back who he's had to beat out in order to get playing time? And the same thing for Brendan Aaronson. Shinyashiki legitimately has had to compete with guys who are called up for their national team, who have gotten double digits in this league before, who are seasoned veterans, who've been doing this for longer than, You know, they've been doing it since Shinyashiki was a teenager before he even, you know, went to DU. And so I think in that, just him getting on the field and getting regular minutes is impressive. And what he's done on the field against the level of center backs he's had to play against in the Western Conference, I think is also impressive. And that's why for me, Mark, if MLSsoccer.com wants to spontaneously give me a vote, I would probably be endorsing Andre Shinyashiki right now as far as just being the most impressive rookie as of September 12th, 2019.
We've pretty much voted. We are in lockstep as usual, Matt, on many issues.
All right.
You know, one of the things that's difficult about us as a radio podcast program,
we're two rational adults who talk about things and then ultimately come to the same well-supported and data-backed up conclusion.
This is like we are the opposite of pardon the interruption. This is like pardon the unbelievable amount of acquiescence, politeness, and agreement that two young gentlemen, well, I'm not so young anymore, but like could come up with. That we just pardon the fact that we almost never disagree with each other. That's our problem, really. Like we're both of a mind. You know, we'll eventually find something we really disagree about.
Okay. All right. Two quick notes that I want to get to, folks. I meant to say this in the introduction, but since we are podcasting after the calendar date, September 11th, I do want to say never forget, and I want to thank you to all of the service men, women, and do I have to say non-binaries? All of the people in the armed forces, past, present, and future, for what you do to uphold the Constitution from foes, foreign and domestic, and ultimately protect the homeland where we can live our lives with safety and a certain level of carefreeness. And I want to thank all of the first responders, past, present, and future, for what you do in maintaining that safety and well-being that we have on the homeland. And then one other thing that I do want to address, Mark, for a sake of completeness, Kai Kamara, folks, was called up and was with the Sierra Leone national team. He scored a goal in one of their qualifying games in a two-leg series, but ultimately they were defeated. So Sierra Leone already out of the World Cup contention for FECAFOOT, or AFCON, excuse me. Mark, any thoughts on there, either in Kai getting called up, Kai scoring a goal, or the team ultimately not winning, and now, you know, Kai has to be heartbroken because I'm going to assume at his age he wasn't going to get a run at 2026, even if Sierra Leone made it that far.
I think it's really important. I know because I've talked extensively with Michael Azira about what it means to get called up. And I remember, you know, the conversation was really interesting because he was very clear that, like, for African teams to call up MLS players is a real challenge. I forget who else was mentioned recently, but there was another player who was mentioned over the weekend who got a call up to either Africa or Europe from MLS, went, sat on the bench, didn't play, went back, and has done that multiple years in a row and has never complained. With African players, you know, the federations tend to be disorganized. The finances tend to be questionable. The team tends to be, you know, of varying quality, definitely based on position. So you get, you know, some teams like Ghana, Cameroon, couple other of the Central African teams where they're really strong at forward and winger, but at like center back, they're very weak. You know, you get different stories where it varies between a player really wants to be up with a team because they have a chance of going somewhere versus a player wanting to be up for a team because they really do want to represent the homeland and they really want to be proud of it. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but basically my point is, I think, you know, the proverbial quote that most athletes like to give at the end of a call up, both to the major leagues, but also to the national team is, I'm just happy to be here. You know, and I think that should be the ultimate thing for Kai, that, you know, getting called up is its own honor. It's its own reward. And I remember I also talked to Lalas Aboubakar about getting called up and the potential for that. And he would play for Ghana, and he had played for the Ghana youth team. And he's on their radar. But the basic idea is that, you know, you're honored to be called up for your country. And, but for African players, it's really likely that you're going to get hauled overseas and then not play. And it's a long flight and it's a very difficult trip.
Well said, Mark. Shall we get to the actual soccer ring?
Club soccer, anyways. We'll talk about club soccer.
All right. Listeners, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids under Robin Fraser were victorious in his home debut as manager. It was a 2-0 victory and a comprehensive victory at that against a beleaguered and undermanned Seattle Sounders team. I saw multiple times people were making jokes, Mark, going back to that Matt Pence tweet about the 8 Rapids fans sitting in the away section at the Clink second game of the season, and people were making jokes that the Sounders only brought 8 players with them in order to play this game, and by some of the stats, you could argue it looked like they were playing under a man. Andre Shinyashiki with a brace in this game. Goals in the 41st minute and the 70th minute. Sam Nicholson sends a ball over the top that goes over everyone's head. Jonathan Lewis collects it at the touchline. As the ball is going over everyone, Shinyashiki yells out to Jonathan Lewis to drop it, i.e. get the ball to him. He immediately goes straight to Shinyashiki, who turns around, spins, and shoots, and the ball goes over Stefan Fry, just barely clips the bottom of the crossbar and ultimately into the back of the net, and then a absolutely comprehensive counterattack. Nicholas Mosqueda to Keegan Rosenberry to Andre Shinyashiki for an absolute tap-in. This game could have been a lot worse, put simply, Mark. The Colorado Rapids had in total 25 shots, 9 of them on target and 12 of them off target. It could have been a lot worse if there was an average goalkeeper and not Stefan Fry in the net. Shinyashiki easily could have had a hat trick in this game against a very average goalkeeper for the Seattle Sounders or a backup or anything like that. And so, you know, it was a comprehensive win and a win that the Rapids deserved in outplaying the Seattle Sounders, and one that, in all honesty, for me, I suspected, Mark. You know, you look at the lineup that Seattle had. Kim Keehee is a competent center back in MLS, but he's relatively slow. Stefan Fry was obviously in goal. And then Nico Lodero was actually moved back to more of a holding role. He was in the two part of the midfield in a 4-2-3-1 rather than being, you know, up further as the traditional number 10. And that front four of Justin Dillon, Bawana, Silva, and Harrison Ship, you know, did almost nothing. Clint Irwin had one little play where he had to worry about something, but it was a pretty quiet night for Clint. And ultimately, you know, a dismantling of, you know, Seattle Sounders 2 and change. And then this past Wednesday, yesterday, as we're recording, folks, the Colorado Rapids were victorious against Zlatan United FC, a.k.a. the LA Galaxy. Lots of half chances that either went completely over the bar, off the frame, Mark, or directly at the goalkeeper, you know, in the first, you know, 65 minutes or so. And then in the 79th minute, we had an absolute eruption for the final 15 minutes of the game. Cole Bassett scores off his shoulder on a set piece, whipped in from Jack Price. Nobody at the back there for the LA Galaxy defense that has been very beleaguered this season. 3 minutes later, Giancarlo Gonzalez, who might have been the one marking Cole Bassett, dunks on the Rapids on a corner. Christian Bavone with the assist on that one. And then just 2 minutes later, Andre Shinyashiki goes in, dribbles through a couple of Galaxy defenders, and it looks like Giancarlo Gonzalez clips the back right leg, or right foot, of Shinyashiki. Shinyashiki goes down. Fotis Bazakos, the head referee, whistles for a penalty. Nicholas Mosqueda scores on that one. In stoppage time is where things got really crazy, Mark. Christian Bavone kicks out, I believe, on Shinyashiki, but he's a little bit off balance. Bazakos initially gives him a straight red card. We go to VAR to review it. Turns out it's a yellow card. We can talk about the pool reporter stuff if you want in a couple of minutes. And then, you know, at the death, you know, it was supposed to be, I think, 4 minutes of stoppage time. It ended up being 104 minutes of total play. You had a ball whipped in. Ralph Felcher was going for it with a header. He ends up putting it wide. Danny Wilson is looking back at the ball and trying to clear it. Danny Wilson tries to kick it. Neither of them really see the other one's part of their body coming, and ultimately Felcher beats him to the ball. It goes wide, and then Felcher, you know, Danny Wilson kicked it, you know, ultimately kicks Felcher in the head, but Felcher was having his head also go towards Danny Wilson's leg. Long review for VAR as well. Ultimately, it is not given, and the Colorado Rapids get out of Dodge. Mark, we're going to lump this recap together. So just collectively in the last 180 minutes of Colorado Rapids soccer, what was your good thing from that?
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of a wild one to kind of lump the two together, especially when Jonathan Lewis was like the class of the first game, and then he was out of this game with a hamstring. It's hard to kind of link the two games, except besides the fact that Robin Fraser has this team playing with like a serious like fire in their belly, which is pretty impressive. He's also really, I mean, I haven't had the time to take apart these games and try and figure out what it is that Fraser is emphasizing and doing. It's actually a really good question for you to ask at training in the next couple weeks. Like, what are you emphasizing? What are the things that needed kind of improvement and correction? But it's clear that they are playing with more confidence. They're playing with a formation that they feel good about. They're playing with a lot of width. They're not playing over the top as much. They play through the middle very well. One of the reasons for that happened is, especially in the Galaxy game, was that the Galaxy, and this is going back over a year, maybe even two, they get pulled apart. I mean, that's just how the Galaxy operate. The Galaxy create big spaces and then operate in big spaces. There's a lot of room. And so teams kind of slash right through them and go right at them. And the Galaxy, I think, kind of hope to reorganize very close and low. But they often are putting themselves in a bad position where they have a lot of guys emergency defending. What's the good thing? The good thing, I guess, is Frazier has the team playing very, very well. And he's also getting results with a variety of lineups, a variety of different players, and without the team feeling, you know, like the season's over. This team still has fight, and I don't exactly know where it's coming from. Matt, how do you, I mean, what's your good thing, but how do you kind of link these two games? Are there things that you see as similar through lines that are parallel?
Yeah, I think there are a couple similarities in here. I think, first of all, if I'm highlighting individual players, I think, you know, we saw this already under Connor Casey when he simplified things, but I think Kellen Acosta and Jack Price have really locked things down up the middle, and the team has been just as stout defensively as they were under Connor Casey. Two starts, I believe, in the last two games for Nicholas Mesquita. You know, he was at the number 10 mostly against Seattle, and everybody was kind of all over the place from an attacking standpoint other than Shinyashiki, who was mostly up top. So, you know, I won't pin down a position for Mesquita, but, you know, he's been playing with, you know, real fire in his belly, and he's had a lot of energy. To your point, question mark, that you've been asking from a systematic, from how Frazier has gotten the team to the point where they're able to, you know, I think we both confidently say, Mark, that the Rapids have had three good performances, they've had three good results, and in all three games, they've deserved to win in terms of what they've done to disrupt the opponent and how the opponent has failed to make them feel uncomfortable. So I've spoken with Lewis on this, a little bit Robin Frazier, but more in a general sense a couple of weeks ago, and then also Cole Bassett had a really good quote as well last night when I asked him about just what he's doing from a systematic standpoint. And he says that positionally, it's very, very clear from an attacking standpoint what every single player's role is and what their role is in that overall system. And they're doing a very, very good job of anticipating plays. So something where, you know, maybe Connor Casey was a little bit more simplified or just had a little, just complete room for creativity of just get the balls out to the wing and then absolutely run. Cole Bassett is aware of what he's supposed to do. So he's aware of, you know, if this is a well-oiled machine, so to speak, you know, Cole Bassett knows what his role is as one of the gears in that machine. He knows what everybody else's role is, and they've done a very, very good job of understanding what to look for in order to take advantage of the opponent. They pressed the Rapids, or they pressed the Seattle Sounders on Saturday. As Jonathan Lewis put it, they hunted Seattle. They completely pushed up the point of confrontation, knowing what they were dealing with defensively. Lodeiro playing out of position and holding midfielder role, Campbell, a reserve player, playing an outside back, and then also some issues just with Brad Smith not being available as an outside back. So let's make them uncomfortable. Don't let them build out of the back. Don't let Nico Lodeiro get uphill. Don't let them get it to any of their attacking players with any space, so to speak. Immediately push up the line of confrontation and take it to them. And the team was very well coached and very well prepared for executing that. Each individual knew what they were supposed to do. They knew what everybody else was doing, and they were able to very effectively anticipate what the opponent was doing. And then, you know, I'd say it was a bit of a similar situation against the LA Galaxy. It was a lot less pressing, but it was just very clear to them what they had to do from an attacking standpoint in terms of creating chances. And, you know, just going back to what we said about Shinyashiki, he was an absolute force all night. And, you know, the Galaxy might have had numbers, especially when they had Corona and Carrasco push back. But, I mean, you've seen it, Mark. Jorgen Selvig is really, really slow. You know, Rolf Felcher is, you know, I think epitomizes the
very foully.
Yes, very foully. But also, Rolf Felcher in his brain, I think there was probably somewhere along his career, he was thinking, I'm best or I have the most fun as a winger. I'm not good enough to professionally make it as a winger. I will put in minimal effort defensively, and then people will want to sign me, and teams will want to sign me, and coaches will want to play me as an outside back because of what I do going forward. And so, you know, Daniel Starris is great in the air, but when the team's playing everything on the ground, Mosquito's really fast, Nicholson's really fast, Bassett covered so much ground as well. I think the team just knew that the Galaxy backline was old and slow, and eventually around the 65th to 70th minute, they were going to completely conk out. And if the midfield was able to do enough rotation to disrupt the build-up play and ultimately the service into Zlatan, that Tommy Smith and Danny Wilson were just going to be able to body up Zlatan enough for them to be okay there, and they were going to be able to take advantage of the Galaxy's clear weaknesses defensively. The last three games, we have seen a team that is extremely prepared for what the opponent was going to do, was clearly well coached and prepared in which to execute that in terms of anticipating what the opponent was doing, taking the action to disrupt what they were doing, and then ultimately executing things once they got the ball, either in the counterattack, in the press, in possession, certainly on set pieces, as we've seen this team all season. And ultimately, they have taken advantage of the opponent's biggest weakness, all while being able to safeguard the opponent's biggest strength. They made Nico Lodero just run way too much in the midfield, and he couldn't do anything in the attack. They isolated Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and he didn't have a whole lot of chances, and ultimately they just did enough in terms of frustrating the New York Red Bulls and not allowing them to press and forcing them to just break down a compact team with 10 players behind the ball. This was a team that almost never was able to do that in the early parts of the season or last year, Mark, where their biggest weaknesses were immediately taken advantage of by the opponent, and even their biggest strength could barely muster anything against the opponent. Robin Fraser has completely flipped this, and this is a team that is, you know, a big burgundy machine right now.
Yep. All right. What's the bad thing, Matt?
I mean, I'm hard pressed to find. I guess you've seen a couple of yellow cards in a couple of these games, and I think you could argue, in the same way that we were both skeptical about the team having a really, really good start under Connor Casey, just because they were playing teams that we thought weren't playing well, and this was, you know, it took a late goal against FC Cincinnati, a late goal against Columbus Crew. They left the door open for the opponent. I wouldn't say that they've left the door open for any of their opponents that they've played in the last three games, but they're not playing well. You know, New York Red Bulls were on a bad run of form. You know, they lost the game midweek in the Derby against, or the game previously in the Hudson River Derby at New York Red Bulls. Obviously, they were playing, you know, effectively a Tacoma Defiance, you know, Seattle Sounders 2-S2 team on Saturday. And, you know, this was an LA Galaxy team that has been great at home, but not super great on the road. And their weaknesses are very apparent in terms of what they have defensively. And if you're able to disrupt what's going on in the midfield, Zlatan can't hurt you because he's never going to be able to get the ball. So, you know, this isn't a team that was going up and, you know, getting a result, you know, against an Atlanta United on the road, for example. Certainly not a New York City FC or, you know, an LAFC that's clicking on all cylinders and has a Carlos Vela, you know, who has a fully healthy hamstring. So they beat teams that on paper are more talented than when fully healthy. I think they got all three of these teams at a good time in which to do it. And I think all three of those teams, their coaching staff and their fans would argue they did not play well in this game. If they played up to their potential, maybe the results would ultimately be different. I think there's a very good possibility that we're going to get a much better barometer of this team on Sunday. Mark, any other bad things you want to talk about?
Yeah, for me, the bad thing is silly. The point has been made a couple times this last week that, the Rapids have been playing, I think, something like 8-6-3 or, 7-5-3, record the last couple of weeks since, Connor Casey was hired, which, you know, is clearly above 500 and definitely would qualify them for the playoffs if it had extended all the way to the beginning of the season. But Hudson's first nine games, which had seven losses and two draws, was so bad that it put the team in no position to do anything. Someone else pointed out today that if the Rapids had just had an average of 0.75 points per game in Hudson's first nine games, the team would be in the playoff hunt right now. which is pretty amazing. So my bad thing is that Anthony Hudson was, and the Rapids under Anthony Hudson, let's not completely pretend like these players.
Other people were culpable in those 9 games.
Yeah, that the, you know, hypothetically, all 11 players could decide they're going to ignore the manager and just go out and play their hardest and win a game. They didn't do that. They just lost. But, hypothetically, if they had just played marginally less terribly in their first 9 games, they'd be in a playoff position right now. Now, technically, I just love throwing this out every once in a while. Technically, the Rapids have not been eliminated from the playoffs yet, which is kind of amazing. They're not going to make the playoffs, but they have not yet been eliminated, which is kind of an amazing thing. All right, what's the big thing then, Matt? Or should I take the big thing since I switched up the order for the first time in our, like, you know, 120 show history or whatever?
We're not at 120 shows.
We ought to be at 100. It feels like I've been talking to you for 120 shows.
Mark, I will serve it back to you.
Serve it.
And I will let you take the first. Yes, you get to bat first on the big thing for this week.
That's too bad because I have no idea what my big thing is. The big thing is, well, it's a thing that I've probably said probably back a whole season ago, but it's next man up. This whole concept that occurs in sport. That this is not a team. It's actually a great contrast against the Galaxy. This is not a team that is defined by one player. So the Galaxy are absolutely defined by Zlatan. So that everybody is going to make fun of the fact that Zlatan came to Colorado and didn't score. When Zlatan doesn't score, the team like almost inevitably loses. Like the Galaxy are a one-man team. And LAFC are a wonderful team. Where Latif Blessing is doing amazing things and Atuesta is doing great things. But it's the Carlos Vela show and there's no way around that. And so many teams in sport anywhere are a one man or a two man or a three man show. And for Colorado, it's, we talk about a different player every week. You know, it was Shinya Shiki a couple, the other day with his brace. It's Jonathan Lewis. When he has a nice big game. We had a lot of conversation early on about how Lalas Abubakar had really reinvigorated the defense. You know, last night, the two players who kind of like stuck out to me the most were Cole Bassett and Danny Wilson. I thought Danny Wilson had a pretty good game.
Retweet.
Which is nuts. These are words that I'm surprised to be. You can hear it in my voice. My brain is surprised that my brain is coming up with this concept that Danny Wilson had a good game, but he was pretty good. And I don't know where it's coming from, except that he's just found a new lease on life, I guess. Cole Bassett had been floating a little bit for a couple games. He hadn't been particularly effective. And Robin Fraser did something I thought that was audacious, which is he installs a 4-3-3, and he basically put Cole Bassett as the underneath dribbly number 10. And it was he was usually the most forward guy underneath the big three. And
it was a little more wide for me, to be honest, Mark. I don't know that there was a sure number 10 in terms of the three midfielders. I think Price was the most sixy of them. I think Bassett was the most winger-y of them, and I think Acosta was the most 80. But in any case, I agree with maybe not your analysis.
We finally disagree. No, but it's you know it next man up. It's that everybody. We've had games where we talked about Nicholas Mesquita doing really well. We've had a couple games where we were impressed with Sam Vines putting Carlos Vela in his back pocket. Everybody on this team is contributing differently every game, and it's great to see, and it's really interesting to think about what this team will be if and when they get one or two DP players next year or in a couple serious solid contributors who are TAM-level players. Like, will that throw off the balance, or will these guys all complement each other really nicely? Matt, your big thing.
I've got four kind of bullet pointy stuff. First of all, Lino DeRosa comes in from Italy, and the Rapids get two wins in two games against two really good teams. So I guess, you know, there was a GoFundMe to get him here. I think now there has to be a GoFundMe to get the paperwork pushed for him to immigrate to the United States because they're undefeated under him. The teams scored six goals in three games, Mark. And how many minutes has Kai Kamara played in the last three games?
Zero.
0 minutes. This team is scoring goals, is creating chances through their system. Kind of as you just said, they're not a one-man team. This offense is not a one-man team. Earlier in the season, we were saying that it was pretty much just get the ball to Kai Kamara and good things will happen. I can't wait to see what this team looks like once Kai Kamara is up top. Number three, do you know who got Zlatan Ibrahimovic's jersey at the end of the game, Mark?
Did you, Matt? Did you?
I did not know. I am a reporter. I don't get free stuff, Mark. That's one of the rules against it. That's one of the rules that you don't do as a member of the media. No, Andre Shinyashiki.
One time I was offered a mug and I didn't take it from the Rapids, and I still regret that. That was 4 years ago, Matt. I was offered a free mug and I didn't take it. Yeah,
I want Zlatan's shirt when he just lost. Like,
yeah. Andre Shinyashiki got the jersey, right, Matt?
Andre Shinyashiki got the jersey, and I think technically Matt Doyle was kind of drumming this up earlier, Mark, but I think, like, we can finally say, post-Connor Casey, under, like, the Rapids are fun, right?
They're fun.
This team
They're
is
fun.
Fun to watch. We legitimately are enjoying watching them. I am not going and covering this game thinking there is some other game I could be at home watching on ESPN Plus that would have a bigger impact on the season, that would be more exciting from a technical standpoint. I am excited to go to Dick's Sporting Goods Park and watch the Rapids because of what the Rapids are doing, rather than seeing what the away team is going to do in dunking on the Rapids. The Rapids, previously the Dunkies, are now the Dunkers, and they're fun.
Yeah, I think that's your first point is a great point. Also, your first one about the dude from Italy, but I think that fourth point is fantastic. Just that, you know, in my whole time of living in Colorado, the Rapids were not the fun team. I got to see a little bit of the Oscar Pereja era in which they were kind of fun. And then it was all the Mastroeni and Hudson era in which they were not fun. They were under Hudson, they were entertaining, but bad. You know, once they figured out the diamond, things were a little bit better, but they generally got beat on the counter, and that was that. So, well done.
Yeah, one last thing I'll say, and then we'll tie a bow on these 6 points here, Mark. I was a pool reporter for the game last night, and it did ask a couple questions that were a pretty big deal. I don't know if you saw, Mark, but I ended up on ESPN FC, which was kind of cool. Or at least my tweet did. Head on over to my Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard for, I guess, the full breakdown. We don't have time, and it's too fun. It's not fun because it's just angry Galaxy fans yelling at the things that I was reporting on. So check out that. And then also cornerthegalaxy.com has the full transcript as well as some commentary that I think is valuable from a VAR standpoint. And you'll get some really hilarious commentary from the Peanut Galaxy section of LA Galaxy Twitter. But let's move on, Mark. This coming Sunday at BMO Field in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on the Reds, Toronto FC, Robin Fraser's previous employer. It'll be at 3 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on, you'll probably have to check the morning of to see if anything's changed with the altitude sports kerfuffle. But in any case, Toronto FC, Mark, are currently fourth in the Eastern Conference. They are in a playoff position and have a chance to host a playoff home game. They have 42 points off of 30 games played, a record of 11-10-9 with a +3 goal differential, and their record at BMO this season is 7-4-4. Not great, not too shabby for a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. Since last we spoke, Mark, the Colorado Rapids, relatively speaking, have shot up the Western Conference standings. They are currently in 10th outright, with 36 points off of 30 games played, a record of 10-14-6 with a -6 goal differential. Their road record this season, Mark, speaking of going into BMO, just 2-8-4, but their last home game was one of those two wins, and the other road win was against the aforementioned LA Galaxy. So Mark, let's go through Toronto FC's roster right now. I will say, Mark, listeners, Toronto FC, just like the Rapids, did also play on Saturday. They were at or did play last night, Wednesday. They were at New York City FC. They got a 1-1 draw in that game in which they probably were outplayed slightly by New York City FC, but that happens to a lot of teams at Yankee Stadium these days. Greg Vanney is the head coach still for the Reds, Mark. They've had a little bit of a change up in goal. Quentin Westberg has unseated Alex Bono, who was with them along with Clint Irwin, and Bono was the starter when they won MLS Cup a couple years ago. They've done a little bit of rotating on the back line, but the big thing here from the standpoint of Rapids fans, I don't know if you know this, Mark, but Omar Gonzalez is back in MLS, and he's with Toronto FC and playing very, very well. Aro is their big outside back. It'll be really exciting to see who matches up against him as far as positionally, winger versus outside back. Michael Bradley and Marky Delgado are obviously the anchors in the midfield from that standpoint. First year man in MLS, Alejandro Pozuelo, and possibly a good contender for MLS newcomer of the year, the Spanish number 10, is their main center attacker. And then Jozy Altidore, who was having a bit of an injury a couple of games ago, was not with the U.S. for camp because of that, Mark, did start in this game on Wednesday against NYCFC and played the full 90 minutes. No goals for Jozy in that one, but he did draw the penalty that ultimately got Toronto FC their goal to a 1-1 draw. Mark, what do you see in the Reds? What do you see in their kind of up and down season, especially given how the bottom fell out last season, and obviously Sebastian Giovinco left, and then a couple weeks later Pozuelo comes in competing for a playoff spot, but not a, you know, an outright top of the line team in the Eastern Conference. And then in particular, understanding that Robin Fraser probably knows exactly what Toronto FC's game plan is going to be at an individual level, so I imagine that the Rapids are going to be well versed on what Jozy Altidore and Omar Gonzalez and Michael Bradley are going to do. What do you see in this game on Sunday?
Well said. All those lead ins, especially the Omar Gonzalez shout, because I love him as a player, although he's definitely, you know, less of the guy that he used to be. First things first, I do want to point out or say, clearing my own conscience, that this was the only Rapids game I was going to be going to this year. But it turns out that my son has his opening game for our local travel team. So I wasn't, they scheduled him at the same time. So unfortunately, I'd rather go see my kid. I'm also an assistant coach for the team. So I'd rather go see my kid play than drive 5 hours each way to go see Toronto play the Rapids, which is a bummer. It means that this is the first time in 5 years I've never seen the Colorado Rapids live in a game. I only got to one MLS game this year at all, and that was in Los Angeles. Next year, the Rapids will play a few more games closer to Pittsburgh. They'll be in Cincinnati, they will be in Columbus, they will be in DC. All of those are within a 3-hour drive from my house, as opposed to Toronto, which is 5.5, and New York, which is 6. So anyways, I think everything you said is great. I want to add that Pozuelo is kind of the guy who plays underneath Jozy as the dribbly number 10. He's a little bit like Sebastian Giovinco in the sense that they set up a similar dynamic of the two of them playing off each other, but he's not short. He's a little bit more like a Miguel Almirón or a Pity Martinez in that he likes to dribble wide. He likes to take that shot on his own. He's not exactly going to wait for Jozy to knock the ball down and then run onto it like the way Gio did, Seba did. He's not as spinny. He's not as tricksy and flicksy. He's a little bit more shoot the gaps as a forward guy. The other guy that I think is interesting to watch, mostly I'm speaking out of ignorance rather than interest, is Nicolas Benazet, who is a recent addition. He came right around the transfer deadline on July 30th. He's technically on a loan from, I believe it's pronounced Wien Kamp, which is the French Ligue 1 team, and with the black and red cool stripy pattern. He's a winger, and Benazet in 4 starts already has 2 goals and a lot of shots, 12 to be exact. So he's going to come off that left side. He's a left-footed player, I believe, and I think he's a guy to watch. He should be interesting to see, especially to see how he will match up and what he will do in playing against Kellen, not Kellen, Keegan Rosenberry on that right side. So those are a few of the things I think. Also coming off of, as you mentioned, Matt, short rest. It'll be interesting to see whether Jozy Altidore starts up top or whether, considering his recent play and busyness, whether they won't start somebody else up there. Patrick Mullins has been the backup starting striker when needed. So Toronto's been mediocre all year. They just haven't really gotten into gear. At no point this year have they really been impressive. They've had short spurts where they kind of looked good and short spurts where they kind of looked bad. And that's what you get when you have an 11-10-9 record. Just very show up, play decent. They tend to win by one or lose by one. They are not, nobody has put them in any of the conversations in the Eastern Conference for teams that are interesting or teams that have, been exciting or anything like that. They're just, they're a bunch of guys, you know, they're a bunch of guys. Michael Bradley and, Jozy Altidore are still holding it together. But they are considering, you know, we probably have mentioned this in the past, but we haven't played an Eastern Conference team in a few weeks, maybe even months.
Red Bulls.
They're in, oh yes, well them. But they're in a position where they could drop out of playoff contention if they lose a couple games. So this is an important one. It's a home game. They're pretty good at home, 7-4-4. With 42 points, they're only 5 points right now above the playoff red line. Although Montreal has been pretty mediocre for the last couple games, and Orlando has never been consistent or aggressive this season. So they may just limp their way into the playoffs and then get knocked out first. The other thing, last thing I'll say is this. They are currently in fourth. They really want to hold on to that spot, because if they fall to fifth, they open away. And their away record, as is most teams, is not as good as their home record. So that's what to take into account with Toronto. I think this game is going to be a tough one for them, though.
No, I agree with you, Mark. I think the one thing that maybe not nervous, but has me curious about this team is the Rapids have yet to play a team that had a player who is able to single-handedly take over the game, put in a good position. You know, the New York Red Bulls are very much offense and defense by committee. You know, Bradley Wright Phillips started in the game, but he's had a really bad year and he was injured, and then Brian Wright unseated him and they've been going back and forth. You know, Kaku hasn't been that fantastic for long stretches this season. You know, we already talked about how the Galaxy, you know, took Zlatan out of the game for much of you know, last night. And then, you know, Nicolò Daro was maybe the one player you were really worried about, but he had to play so far back. You know, he wasn't in a good position there, and the only damage he was going to be able to do was going to be on set pieces, and good luck doing that against Lalas Abubakar and Tommy Smith. So this is the first situation you have, assuming that Jozy starts and is able to play most of the game, that you have a center forward who is able to single-handedly take over the game, put in a position where he is going to get service in which to do so. I would say the same thing of what Pozuelo is going to be able to do, you know, in the middle in the attack, especially with the, you know, Benazé, and then Gallardo is the other one that they have. And they also have Jonathan Osorio, who'll be back, you know, no longer with the Canadian national team, who I assume will be available for selection for the game on Saturday, on Sunday as well. And then Michael Bradley, you know, the Rapids have really yet to play, you know, a truly, you know, gritty, almost Rapids thug life level holding midfielder who can make things miserable for the opponent in the attack, or really make, you know, Akel and Acosta have to work. And if anybody's going to be able to do that, it's going to be Michael Bradley himself on that front. And then, you know, I'm kind of curious to see what the Rapids do as far as an attacking standpoint, given that they haven't really gone long ball. I'm kind of wondering, even if, you know, I'll be at training tomorrow, folks, so I'm going to try and confirm, because there's been a lot of confusion with the international call-ups between Kai Kamara and then also Diego Rubio about their suspension and when they'll be available. Kai got his red card against RSL and then was called up to Sierra Leone, so is he available? That's kind of been in doubt amongst the Rapids media. And the same thing for Diego Rubio, who got the yellow card at the end of the game against the Red Bulls. That triggered yellow card accumulation for him. And then he got called up for Chile. And then the other thing on top of that, Mark, Jack Price with his yellow card last night will be unavailable for this game. So does Danny Wilson move into the midfield? You know, this is maybe the first – I can't believe I'm saying this, Mark, since you talked about earlier, you know, my brain is surprised. You know, not having Jack Price, I'm kind of wondering, like, would it not be okay to have Johan Blomberg or – I can't even remember his name now. The African one who was signed on, who was on targeted allocation money, who was with Manchester City. I can't even remember this guy's name. Mark, who am I missing right now?
Nana Boateng.
Nana Boateng. Thank you. Okay, like
out of sight, out of mind.
In any case, I am interested, curious, and slightly worried about what Robin Fraser does from that standpoint in terms of who takes up the Jack Price role, or what is he doing as far as rotating stuff. Because, okay, maybe Cole Bassett slips into that role alongside Acosta, but then maybe Mesquita's starting, or do you bring, you know, where's John Lewis as far as the hamstring? There's some interesting personnel decisions for Robin Fraser to make with Jack Price being unavailable and pending also, you know, Diego Rubio's lack of availability, and then also Kai Kamara. But I'm maybe not worried about those two because the players he's had without them have been extremely effective. And I'm wondering if maybe just again going with trying to run because Bavinga, you know, isn't super fast, nor is Lorenz Simon if he gets on the field, nor is, Omar Gonzalez. So, you know, I think you go into the, you know, the deep lying, you know, mid block they have. You counterattack just like against the New York Red Bulls. You get the ball out wide. You make Aro and De Leon, you know, commit, defensively. And even if they're overlapped, and you force the center backs to have to be faster than you and more anticipating with the ball on the ground. And I think, you know, with or without John Lewis's hamstring, I think Sam Nicholson can absolutely do that. I think Andre Jinyashiki can absolutely do that. But what does the Rapids defense do given that there is a quality number 10 and number 9 and a supporting cast around them? And what do the Rapids do as far as the midfield is concerned, especially given that Michael Bradley is going to absolutely be a bulldog in the middle of the park? And maybe, you know, the one player who I would think would be able to match that from an intensity, from a physicality, from a field generally standpoint in Jack Price will be unavailable for that game. Those are the things that I'm going to be watching and I'm really curious to see that I think will probably turn the tide and ultimately determine whether or not Toronto gets 3 points that will be massively critical to them as far as their playoff hopes are concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the simple answer is likely that you turn to Kellen Acosta and just ask him as the manager to do a little bit more dirty work and sit a little bit deeper. But this is a team that's been playing essentially with two central defensive-ish holding midfielders for the better part of the season since Anthony Hudson was fired. So what do? Do you kind of ask Acosta to do it by himself? Do you go back to more of like a opened up 4-4-2 where there really isn't a natural defensive midfielder? You know, Danny Wilson has played there and has had good games there this season after not having good games there the previous season. So that's another option. And then I think one last thing is that if you move Danny Wilson into the middle to play alongside Kellen Acosta, then you potentially give an opportunity for Sam Rabin to get his first start as a center back. He's been on the bench but hasn't played for the last two games, and I think it would be great to see the kid get his first start at some point this season. Also of note, Matt Hundley was on the bench for this last game and also didn't come off. You know, if you're going into the stretch of the season where nothing matters at all, then you should probably get the kids some experience.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Mark. Any other things that we want to say about this game? I guess, you know, are you fancying a prediction this week?
This has got to be, I think, of all the games that I've predicted or thought about predicting, this is one that I have no idea about. It really, to me, it kind of comes down to like, how much of Toronto is going to show up and where are they mentally? And I don't really have a good sense of that. I know, Chris Mavinga is a really talented center back who 18 months ago when Toronto was, in contention to win the CONCACAF championship, was the absolute linchpin. I mean, when he showed up to defend, he was lights out, one of the best center backs in the league. And he got hurt and he never
really reasserted himself. I mean, now in the conversation about the best center backs in the league, you hear Iko Parra's name thrown out there. You hear a couple other players around the league for NYCFC. But you just don't hear Mavinga anymore. I haven't heard his name spoken out loud in 12 months. And he's starting next to Omar Gonzalez. So where are these guys? How bad do they want it? Do they even care about, you know, winning the playoffs? Has the new French guy they added, does he even know that there are playoffs? Like, how's this team gelling? Is it going to work?
Does he think the Rapids are Burnley?
is Josie healthy? Like, you know, you are betting this game on whether, whether Toronto has 11 guys who want to run through a brick wall. And I guess I've just convinced myself the answer is probably not. They just don't seem that impressive. So I'd say Colorado is probably going to pull this one out. Like, I think they win another 2-1 nail biter, or maybe just a 1-1 draw.
Mark, I think we know what the title of this week's show is going to be, because we disagree again. I'm going to take Toronto in this one. I just think, you know, Greg Vanney is extremely pragmatic, and I think if anybody's prepared for what a Robin Fraser coach team will look like without any prior film on Robin Fraser with that team, I got to think that it's going to be Greg Vanney. They know, especially after, you know, getting a very positive result against New York City FC, that this is a game that they absolutely have to win. So I think it's going to be 2-1 to Toronto in this one, and it's going to be a masterclass skill. Like, you know, just tip of your cap. And, like, there's nothing you could do. You've got, sometimes you just have to say touche, towards, you know, Josie Altidore on a goal, or maybe Pozuelo on a set piece or something like that. But it's going to take a moment of magic that is going to make highlight reels, and there's going to be nothing that anybody for the Rapids could have done to prevent it. And, you know, congratulations, you know, Toronto FC have three big money, highly productive, star DPs, and, you know, depending on what's going on with Tim Howard's calf, there's a very good possibility that the Rapids are going to be young, a little inexperienced, and certainly lacking any DP leadership on the field in Toronto. So I'll have this. You know, either way, Mark, one of us is going to be wrong here because we didn't pick the same thing. But all right, let's get out of here, Mark. Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @LWSMattPollard, @soccer_rabbi. Check out our written content at lastwordonsoccer.com and rabbimarkastergoodman.com/soccer_rabbi. Check us out on the Twitters at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. If you want to get in touch or have something that's longer than 280 characters, Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends about us wherever you get your podcasts. We're on pretty much anywhere you could want us to be. Let us know if we're not somewhere you like. DenverPost.com/HTHL and Patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast if you believe we bring monetary value to your lives. With that, listeners, we'll see you next week.